what bothered me in Wall Street was that these people are saying, hey, we're your advisors. Trust us, right? You let your guard down, and it's really kind of like this Trojan horse, where once you're in there, then they're selling you all sorts of stuff that are certainly not in your best interest. And what I loved about self-directed was, hey, we're putting people back in control, and you can pick your own investments based on your own interests.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Bernard Reese. How are you doing today, Bernard?
Doing great. Happy to be here and looking forward to this.
Thanks so much. Thanks for being here. Bernard empowers individuals to optimize their finances using proactive and innovative strategies. He provides an integrated approach to tax and financial planning for real estate pros, focusing on their unique profiles and opportunities. Bernard is also the founder of 401kcheckbook.com, which gives investors direct control of their tax-sheltered funds for real estate equity and debt opportunities using checkbook control, IRAs, QRPs, solo 401ks, and checkbook life insurance. Bernard, I'm super excited to have you on the show today. Could you tell the listeners a little bit more about your background and how you got started?
Glad to. I am a CPA by training. I also hold various other financial licenses, securities, insurance, and other certifications. The overwhelming theme in what I've taken upon myself is to really have a complete understanding and an integrated approach to finances. So in contrast with what you find out there, your specialist in one narrow area of tax may not understand some other area of your investing. They may not understand real estate. And your financial planner may not understand your real estate and may not understand your taxes. My goal is to be able to take all these together in order to help clients. So I got started and got into this because as a CPA, you get to see firsthand a lot of things that people are dealing with. And then you see different financial tools being pitched to your clients. And then, frankly, as a CPA, you probably, you know, have a gut feeling. Your gut tells you is this a good thing or a bad thing, but you're not an expert in them. And I set out to change that and say, all right, we need somebody that's a professional, that's not out to kind of sell and pitch things, that can fully understand these tools and really help you.
Sure. Yeah, that's awesome. So would you say a big part of your focus seems to be self-directed IRAs? Is that right?
Oh, it certainly is. And not restricted to IRAs, but it's self-directed retirement accounts in general. And the idea is in that space, there are so many different structures that can be set up. And each one has its pros and cons, and each one is well matched to a particular investor. So depending on your tax profile, your investment opportunities, your long-term goals, you'll be matched to one account or another. So self-directed IRA is kind of just one group of accounts, but there are so many others out there.
Could you give the listener, let's just say someone isn't super familiar with how a self-directed IRA works. Could you just give a very simple explanation for how it works exactly?
The idea behind self-directed accounts is that the tax code allows tax-sheltered accounts, 401ks, IRAs, HSAs, defined benefit plans, to be invested in nearly any asset class. And we do is set up accounts for you that will enable you to access those. So if you go to your traditional provider, your financial advisor, your Series 7, Series 65, or your Schwab Fidelity, they're going to set up accounts that can only be invested in publicly traded securities, which is great if that's what you want to do. But if you are interested in investing in real estate, you need to come to a provider like Resure that can guide you to the right account type for you and set it up so that you can get into that real estate or other private asset.
Got it. That makes sense. And when you invest in real estate, it's my understanding that you can't necessarily invest in your own deals. You have to kind of be a passive investor. Can you speak to that and why that's the case?
So there are rules that apply to retirement accounts that you won't encounter if all you're investing in is publicly traded securities. But the rules are there precisely because retirement accounts can be invested in private assets. So it's clear that that's okay. So if that takes anybody by surprise, about 70% of the rules written for IRAs were written for private investments and don't apply to you if you're actually at Schwab, Fidelity, or Vanguard. And those rules, the most important set of rules, are called the prohibited transaction rules. And what those are designed to do, they're designed to ensure that you use these accounts for long-term investing rather than your own current benefit. So they keep you from being a counterparty to a transaction with your IRA or 401k. And it's good just to illustrate the concept, illustrate the principle in a real, in a real simple case. You can buy real estate with your retirement account, but you cannot buy real estate that you already personally own. So that would be off limits. And why would that be? So if you're going out, suppose you have $500,000 in your retirement account and you'd like to buy a vacation home. You may have this great idea. Hey, I've got some real estate here. I've got an asset that I own. On the market, I could sell it for $400,000, right? But I need $500,000 to buy that second home and pay for the vacation and the new car. See, here's what I'll do. I know I don't want to take a taxable distribution from my retirement account, but how about if I take the asset, this $400,000 asset, and I sell it to my retirement account as a real estate investment for $500,000, right? How does that sound? So now I just got $500,000 out of my retirement account by having my retirement account make a real estate investment, right? And your incentive to do that is because you need cash now. But you can see that that's not the idea behind IRAs and 401ks. The idea is for you to save long-term. So to prevent any type of conflict of interest between your long-term goals and your immediate needs, Congress said you and your retirement account can't do business with each other. And it's not just you, it's you and a couple of other related parties to try to prevent this kind of scenario.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that makes sense. Is there a typical kind of profile for clients of yours? I'm curious if you're seeing where those investment dollars go. I would assume a large percentage goes into real estate. I, of course, interview a lot of operators on the show who do syndications, and most of them will accept self-directed IRAs in their offerings. So I'm just curious if that's the majority of what you're seeing as far as investments.
So real estate is kind of the perennial and consistent go-to, but from time to time there are others that overtake it or have a, just achieve great popularity. So one thing we see a lot of is cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency is a great asset for retirement accounts for a range of reasons. And again, we're investment agnostic. We're not here to recommend investments. The people that we're working with know, all right, I want to invest in ABC or XYZ, and we're going to figure out the best structure for them, the best way to achieve that goal with their retirement accounts. So cryptocurrency over the last 2-3 years, has seen its highs and lows. And right now in the current environment, we're also seeing, interest in cryptocurrency really spiking, going up quite high.
So if a person comes across a deal, they do not have a self-directed account yet, what's the process for them to get started, get that set up, and then, pull the trigger on their first investment?
The process for them would be, and just break out the various, and kind of the granular level, what they really need to do, and then talk about how they can practically execute that. So there are a range of retirement accounts that can be used to get money into a deal, be it a syndication or your own deal, if you find a property that you want to buy with and invest in. So the first step you need to understand is, all right, which retirement account is going to work best for your profile and your goals? And once that's in place, you have to implement it. But the first step is really understanding and getting a solid grasp of what's going to work best for you, considering the rules and your tax strategy. And then you can implement that and execute that with a range of companies. So who would be, in terms of actually getting accounts set up, there are quite a few options out there. But the most of those options are limited to kind of setting up the account. The support that you need before setting up an account in terms of, all right, what am I really getting myself into? What are the long-term consequences and long-term compliance and long-term strategy? what's going to work best. And also in terms of the support after that setup, understanding what your compliance obligations are and how you can optimize things, that's something that's lacking. So the most, you know, the first thing is you need somebody that's going to help you before you set it up. You need somebody that's going to help you after you set it up, and you're going to need somebody that actually helps you set it up. So the question is, though, who are the players in this space? The overwhelming majority of companies out there are companies that set things up, but are not focused on giving you the kind of real meaningful support that you need before and afterwards. If you look in the fine print, they all say, you know, go to your tax advisor. Some of them are much more upfront about it, and they're like, hey, don't ask us anything tax questions. And many of them will kind of try to answer questions without kind of the one hand will answer the questions, at the same time say, we don't give tax advice. And that can lead to suboptimal results. So you need a tax pro, and you need somebody that actually sets up these accounts. Once this account is set up, you can have access to your money in a variety of ways. So you can have your money held by a custodian, or you could actually have it in a bank account that you control. So there are different models out there. And the one that's going to be the best fit for any individual, again, is going to be based on your needs, you know, your deal volume. If somebody's doing kind of a one and done, it's not that important for them to have direct access to the money. But if somebody's going to be more active, the value of having direct access to the funds in a bank account can be incredibly valuable in terms of bringing down your costs and also being able to get deals. Real estate is a fast moving place. If you're doing your own deals, and if you need to say, hey, I'm not sure I'm going to have the money, let's see if the custodian can get the money, you can lose a deal.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit more specifically about 401k checkbook, and do you offer both models, or is there one model that you prefer and that you guys offer?
So in terms of the models, there are two sides to that. One side is the kind of tax sheltered accounts. What's it going to be, right? The tax code and labor code describe IRAs, SEP IRAs, traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, qualified retirement plans, aka QRP, 401k. That's one side of things, and we offer all of those. Now, within each of those, though, there are different approaches to setting them up. So do you need it set up with the type of access that will give you the money in a bank account? Do you need it set up with the type of asset protection that comes with having an entity or a trust? So again, we do all those. We are not a custodian, and these are mutually exclusive roles. So a self-directed IRA, in contrast with, say, QRP, 401k, requires a custodian. So when we work with people, most of our clients are getting direct control of their money, and we marginalize the role of the custodian, but there will be a partner custodian in the background.
Awesome. That makes sense. So before the call, we were talking a little bit about the space, the self-directed space, and kind of some misinformation out there in the market right now, especially in the last couple of years. Can you speak to kind of people making big promises and maybe some problems in the space and how you guys are different?
That's a great question, and it's really important and great value for people to understand this. It's not unique to this space. Throughout the financial space, there are people that are out there to sell things to you. And interestingly enough, the appeal of the self-directed space to me was that it's kind of moving away from Wall Street and a model where I saw people pretending to be your advisors, but are just salespeople in sheep's clothing. That was my issue there, is that these guys, hey, they're just salespeople. They're not there to really advise. They're there to figure out, okay, how many products can we sell you and how much commission can we earn? And that's okay, right? When you know, if you go to a regular shop, you know, the regular marketplace, you understand that the person that you're dealing with is sitting in the other side of the table and they want to sell you something. Obviously, if they're honest, they're not going to represent that we're selling you, you know, not going to sell you something that is damaged, but you have to figure out if what they're selling to you is really the best thing for you. What bothered me in Wall Street was that these people are saying, hey, we're your advisors. Trust us, right? You let your guard down, and it's really kind of like this Trojan horse, where once you're in there, then they're selling you all sorts of stuff that are certainly not in your best interest. And what I loved about self-directed was, hey, we're putting people back in control, and you can pick your own investments based on your own interests. But what I've learned is that it's not necessarily Wall Street that's the issue. I mean, Wall Street is kind of institutionalized this type of model where people's, you know, which is flawed, but you have folks in the self-directed space that are likewise. There are good folks and there are people that are less good. And in the self-directed retirement account space, there are certainly promoters out there that are telling people, hey, get this account. It's the best thing that has ever happened, or get this specific type of account. And it certainly is not like that. People need advice to understand which account is going to be best for them. So if anybody out there is telling you, we have this account, this is the best account for you, and it's the only account, this is the one account everybody should have, that should be a red flag. People should realize, hey, there's a conflict of interest here. The tax code allows for dozens of account types, and that's because depending on who you are and what you're trying to do, there's going to be a certain account type that's going to be for you. And this has been kind of exacerbated over the last period. So I say people just find out, you want to, when you get, look at the space, look for somebody that has credentials, real credentials, that kind of says, all right, they're going to put your interest first.
I'm glad you brought that up, because a few minutes ago you were saying, you know, when you do this, there are three things that are important. There's kind of like the guidance before setting up the account, the actual paperwork and getting things rolling with the account, and then afterwards, what to do with that money and how to move it, how to invest it. The second two make a lot of sense. It seems pretty straightforward. You set up an account, you choose an investment, and you invest. But before it's set up, that's where my question was. And you just mentioned there are dozens of different account types. Can you speak to a little bit more of the differences, some major differences in those account types, and what people should be aware of before they go ahead and pull the trigger on setting up their account?
There are many different retirement accounts, and they can be categorized in a couple of different ways. So one easy way to categorize them is to view the two groups of accounts as IRA accounts and QRP accounts. So there are individual retirement arrangements and there are qualified retirement plans. An individual retirement arrangement includes traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, SEP IRAs, and simple IRAs. And if anybody created a SAR-SEP IRA before they went out of style, no, they'll still exist, but only if you created them while they were allowed. So there are five types of IRA accounts. Within qualified retirement plans, much harder to define. It's a much more nuanced area, but there are 401k plans, profit sharing plans, defined benefit plans, cash balance plans, thrift savings plans, 403b, 457. So those are two groups of plans that have many subcategories. And even within those subcategories, there's a lot of room for plan design. You know, there's a lot more flexibility in the qualified retirement plan space. But if we try to distill things to their most fundamental level, what sets IRAs apart from QRPs is that an IRA is a trust set up for the benefit of an individual, hence individual retirement arrangement. And QRP is a qualified retirement plan, a trust set up for the benefit of employees. So those are two groups of plans. Each one has its pros and cons. Not everybody can have every which one. So there are going to be a lot of factors that are going to dictate, firstly, all right, just based on your tax profile or where your tax shelter dollars are, that can instantaneously say, all right, this road is blocked off to you. You can only take that route. But then even if you have the range of options available to you, what's going to be best? So it's about, number one, avoiding very costly pitfalls, because a little mistake here can be incredibly expensive. And the second aspect of it is, all right, once we've kind of narrowed the universe and figured out, all right, these are the options that are potentially available to you, because option A and option Z are not available to you because of your tax profile. So from all the other available options, what's going to be most strategic for you? That's the secondary question. So these are two aspects that have to be addressed up front to figure out what's going to be best. And this is where I see the greatest number of mistakes being made.
It's that time of the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Bernard, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
All right. So my focus is debt investing. That's my favorite angle. And obviously, everybody's got their angle and based on what they're doing and what works best for them. One great deal and an interesting deal was, and I'm going to have to be, being that these are real deals, I have to be cautious about what kind of information is provided on the ear. But these are lending deals required very, very fast funding. And obviously, a bank wasn't an option. It's a non-traditional asset class. So it's within real estate. It has a real estate component to it, but it also has an operations component. So there are two components to the deal. There's the real estate side and the business side. It's an asset class which banks lend a max of 50% LTV and the potential for environmental issues as well. So the way, for those that are familiar with lending, private lending, hard money lending, whatever you'd like to call it, generally the way this is going to work, you're going to have a deal, say you have a fix and flip that you want to do, and you need money for the down payment. The bank is not going to fund this, or the bank was only, you know, you need money, you need your equity contributed to the deal. Bank's going to give you somewhere between 60 to 80%, but you need to come up with the equity, or you're going to refi at the end with the bank, right? So you can go to a private lender that can fund faster than a bank. We would take a first, generally, we're looking for a security interest, first position security interest in the asset to collateralize the loan. You get the funds fast, but the interest rate is going to be higher than what a bank charges. And the risk is higher. There's a reason, and the supply and demand allows for this. So you're getting funds that a bank would never give you. You're getting great flexibility. You're going to pay a higher interest rate. It's designed to be an all-around win-win-win because the debt investor, they don't have to be busy with the rehab. You're getting a nice return on your money. But of course, you as the equity investor have done the math here and figured, hey, I can pay between 10 to 15% on this short-term money and then still walk away with an incredible, incredible ROI and a deal that you otherwise could not have done.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what is the timeline on a typical deal like that for you?
So you're looking 6 to 12 months is what you're generally looking for. But sometimes you get these deals, which is like, okay, we need, there's a funding, there's a closings has to happen. And there's not enough time to get all that paperwork done. And then you may be, you know, the rate of interest that you get, you may be putting short-term funds out for a week or two, and you may structure it differently. So rather than taking a security interest, you may actually take ownership of the deal, and the actual, say, deal sponsor has a right of redemption. So if they pay back what they owe, that they kind of get to buy the deal back from you. The concept, though, when you're a lender, unless you're a predatory lender, you're not looking to own the deal. That's like the worst case scenario. But you're taking a fixed return in exchange for limiting your downside, right? When you're the equity investor, you own the deal. The upside is infinite. The downside is not infinite, but it can be, you know, you can lose a lot, you know, quite a bit of money if you lose the deal. When you're a lender, you're saying, hey, we're going to take 12% on the money. And worst case scenario, if somehow this deal goes south, we're going to take the property so we can cap our losses. Now, you don't want to take the property. You just want this deal to go through. You want the deal to be a home run for the sponsor, for them to make their money, you to make the money, and everybody move on and keep doing deals.
Sure, sure. Is there a process that you use to vet those sponsors? I'm assuming you look at their track record and their ability to execute that business plan. What tips or methods do you use to vet those sponsors?
So there are a couple of different things you look at. I, in particular, am very sensitive to things that I, you know, that make you question character. So you do a background check. And just based on what I've observed, and you know what they say, you can't, life's too short to make all the mistakes yourself. You've got to learn from others' mistakes. And so what I've seen is that, you know, I don't know how you're going to react to this, but for those that have demonstrated some sort of moral lapse in the past, while I certainly believe that everybody deserves second chances, and on a moral perspective, I don't judge anybody, you don't want to risk your money on that person. And I've seen the people that do that and get burned. So you're looking to do a background check and also see what you could turn up. It's amazing what you can turn up simply by using Google if you know how to use Google. I know it sounds odd, like knowing how to use Google, but that really is a thing. If you know how to use search engines and how to find things, it's pretty amazing what you can turn up. Once had an incident where so I'm a CPA, and somebody was looking for funding, and I was like, great, they're an accountant. All right, sounds good, right? Accountants are usually good people. Maybe they're not the greatest at operating real estate, but it's usually an indication of the type of person, the mentality, character that you'd be happy to work with. But at the same time, that kind of is a red flag, because how many accountants do you know that are out there rehabbing properties? Not that nobody's doing it, and not that, you know, it's great if they can. So you do a background check, and then you find that, oh, this person used to be a CPA. They lost their CPA certification. It was revoked because the firm they were running was taking people's social security numbers and getting claiming tax refunds on behalf of those taxpayers, and the firm was pocketing the money.
Wow. Yeah, that's not good. That's not what you want to find when you do a background check.
Yes.
So just going back a little bit to the model itself, I love the model, you know, 12% returns. That's great. It makes a lot of sense. But is there a worse deal that you can speak to just shortly here?
I'll say this is not necessarily, let's call it a deal type.
Okay.
And this deal type can be your best and be your worst. It's when you do deals with people that you're close to. So the trust level is high. I'm very into verification. Trust can be, you know, your gut can really mislead people. So when you're kind of going on the internet, you're saying, hey, this guy's been on a lot of podcasts, he's put out a bunch of books or something. That's really not verification, because today you and I know, you know, obviously there are good guys that have good books, good podcasts, good everything, but then it becomes too easy for somebody that just wants to sell stuff to write some sort of book that has, that's just part of the sales funnel, but they're not really out to help you. So I'm always into really trying to get past the marketing stuff and to the substance and try to move away from trust into verify. But when you're working with people that you know for your entire life, the trust factor is there, and legitimately so, you know them. And it can make for really streamlined transacting. And if all's well, that turns out well. So if the deal actually goes through, everybody is happy, it's amazing, it's the best transaction. But if things don't go well, and all of a sudden you're looking at, all right, we're going to take this asset away from you, are you going to do it? You know, if you do it, kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. All right, so we're not going to. All right, so we're going to give you an extension. And all of a sudden, this is, you're in a really, really uncomfortable scenario. So I think dealing with friends and family, when it works, it is the greatest, most streamlined transacting out there. But you got to be aware of the risk. If it goes wrong, it's going to be very, very uncomfortable. And it may, and then you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Do I sacrifice the relationship or the money? And neither of them is a great choice.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. What do you have any advice on how to avoid being in that situation?
It's a tough one. I think it's about assessing the people. If you're going to do this kind of deal, it's understanding, is your counterparty mature enough to understand the realities, right? Because many people are not. In the ideal relationship, we get it, right? We understand this is the way things happen, and the fact that you have some other outside person relationship shouldn't impact anything. The second thing is, do you want it to be somebody whose life is not altered by the fact if things go wrong, the outcome? All right, they may lose money, may not be the outcome they want, but it's not fundamentally altering their life. Because then, that gives you a lot more flexibility. Nobody likes a deal that went sour, but you don't want to be dealing with somebody that, you know, if you take the property away, somehow they've lost their life savings. And then if you let them have it, you know, you're out a nice chunk of change. And then it's maybe being really ensuring that they, you know, taking the traditional loan documents is legalese, it's dense. It's almost not designed to be read by anybody, right? The borrowers, kind of everybody knows three bullet points. All right, this is the points up front, this is the rate, and kind of that's it. All right. And the fact that what happens if things don't work out, they kind of know it, but it's not front and center. And if you're dealing with friends and family, you may want to say, okay, listen, this is just our own personal note Obviously, you want to work it out maybe with the attorneys to make sure you're not doing something wrong that's going to jeopardize your documents. But something acknowledging that, hey, I know that I read this and these are the potential outcomes. No harm, no foul. This is not a personal thing. This is just on the contrary. We're giving you, we trust you, we like you. We're giving you this opportunity, but the outcome is not in our hands. And the outcome is going to be mechanical, right? It's mechanical. This is what happens. It triggers that in the document. That's what happens. It's not a personal thing. And if you can kind of get them to acknowledge that and kind of have that in writing, you may lose the deal, but if they lose the deal at that point, you don't want to do every deal. All right. And that's something you learn. It takes some time. You don't want to do every deal. Not every deal. There are other deals out there. But if they do sign it, and then if something does go wrong, you know, you can at least know that you were clear about the communication.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Bernard, we're pretty much out of time here, but let me just ask one final question. If someone wanted to get started with a self-directed account, how can they work with you and get started?
So the websites, you know, people can go to resurefinancial.com. They can Google Resure LLC or Resure Financial. They can connect with me on LinkedIn. We've got resources out there. Just Google my name and you'll find good stuff.
Awesome. Well, Bernard, thanks so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it and enjoy the rest of your day.
Mark, it's been a pleasure to be your guest and be well.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.